Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. I'm delighted to be joined by Paco Pollitt for our Matchday 8 preview. But first, we have to touch on the biggest story of the week, and that is, it is finally over for Julen Lopetegui. After a tortuous few weeks, he and Sevilla eventually parted ways on Wednesday night after their 4-1 defeat in the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund. The result didn't seem to matter that much. It was all about Lopetegui's last match in charge. It was an emotional ending, but to remind ourselves of how it got to this point, here's a look back at how we at La Liga Lowdown lived through the slow end of Lopetegui's reign. After a summer of doubts and delays in the transfer market, not many knew how Sevilla would shape up. Sam Leverage had a pretty good idea though, predicting this in our preview podcast.
I think they'll be lucky to get Europa League at best, and I don't think Julen Lopetegui's going to see out the season.
Then, after defeat to Osasuna on opening night, Rory Barlow shared his doubts.
This Sevilla side, it was meant to be a refresh of Lopetegui's project, and it looked more or less the same as it did at the end of last season, which has been the worst part of Lopetegui's project.
A disappointing draw at home to newly promoted Real Valladolid followed before an Andalus derby in Almeria. Sevilla were ahead, but they could not hold on for victory. The away fans were incensed with what they were seeing, and Monchi had to speak to them after the game, which seemed to win them over. Rory, Gregor Chappell and myself analysed Sevilla's worst start in 4 decades. Sevilla, I mean, 1 point from 9, it's their worst start for 41 years in the top flight.
There's a lot of burning debris coming out of this defeat, I have to say, Matt. I mean, Julen Lopetegui came out after this match and accused his players of playing with a glass jaw in the second half, which is quite a strong statement to make about your own squad. He said that they lacked the mentality. Julen Lopetegui doesn't seem to have too many answers. We're seeing a similar Sevilla to the one we saw last season.
It's clear that things are kind of broken and perhaps beyond repair, and I think he'll probably be gone by the World Cup either way.
It's been a nightmare start, to be honest. From what I can see, patience is starting to wear thin with a lot of supporters, really. In Lopetegui's defence, I'd say, obviously losing Jules Koundé and Diego Carlos, one of the best centre-half partnerships in Europe, is always going to affect any side. They haven't really been, in my opinion, adequately replaced. We saw the video from Monchi after the Almeria game, trying to urge the fans to get behind the team. And, you know, you can see the fans buying into that because he's such an iconic figure at the club and he's been there for so long. And again, though, after such a long time, teams have probably figured out Lopetegui a little bit. And I'm not calling for his head, but perhaps a little kind of refresh might benefit the team.
The transfer window closed without sufficient reinforcements, and then Barcelona came to town. Tom Harris discussed the growing discontent.
As for Sevilla, though, my word, they must be feeling sick. To see Jules Koundé, first of all, leave and then not play for the first 2 weeks. Then he comes back to the Sánchez Pizjuán and gets 2 assists in the game. I mean,
like I say, it's really looking a bit ugly now. I mean, then the city was booed off and kind of sarcastically applauded the crowd as he went off, as they were jeering him. You know, Nianzou as well, the new centre-back they've signed, you know, looks like a good player, but he's not been allowed any time to settle at all. You know, still no sight of Marcao as well, the centre-back who was meant to come in to replace Diego Carlos. And then Erling Haaland of Manchester City up next. It's really looking quite bleak.
Bleak it was. Erling Haaland scored 2, City scored 4, and the crowd were furious once more. Ex-president Del Nido was filmed calling for current president Pepe Castro to be removed. Then followed a slight upturn in fortunes with a hard-fought win over Espanyol and a draw against Villarreal. Julen had made it to the international break intact, just about. After the pause, Atleti came to Seville and won comfortably. By this point, it was clear that Lopetegui was not going to be able to turn things around. Here's what Tom Harris had to say about this defeat.
It's bad squad planning. I do feel sorry for Lopetegui, but at the same time, you know, I just don't get the best vibe at the moment that he is really connecting with the players and really helping to get them through this.
By this stage, fans were also turning on the board as rumours of Lopetegui's imminent sacking circled. Jorge Sampaoli was the chosen man to come in and replace him, but they had another game just around the corner. So Julen knows he's sentenced, but he must fulfil his responsibilities. This leads to a surreal press conference, but Lopetegui maintains his dignity, choosing not to reveal his true feelings.
Por respeto a mi principal responsabilidad, no voy a emitir mi opinión al respecto de lo que ha sucedido estos últimos meses. Prefiero guardármelo dentro de la responsabilidad que tengo como entrenador de un gran club como es el Sevilla.
And so we reach the end. After 3 full seasons, a pandemic-era Europa League title, 3 consecutive top 4 finishes, title challenges for large parts, the Lopetegui era is over. At the end of the game, the fans at the Ramon Sánchez Pizjuán gave him a moving send-off to close the chapter. Welcome, Paco. Lovely to have you on board once again. What's your take on the situation at Sevilla with Julen Lopetegui leaving and Jorge Sampaoli arriving on Thursday? It was a dramatic few days. What's your assessment of the situation?
Yeah, it's been an absolute mess, right? I think that we have been so used to Sevilla doing things right in the last few seasons that whenever they get themselves into a mess, at least a mess as visible and as public as this one, we are not, you know, fully comprehending just how bad the whole thing has gone down. I think that the way Lopetegui has been sacked has been everything but ceremonious. Okay, so I think it wasn't really the manager's fault in this case, because this summer has been, at least in the transfer market and in the signings area, not the best for Sevilla. I believe that Monchi has quite a bit of responsibility over there, and Lopetegui just tried to rebuild the squad from the back after losing 2 of his biggest players, as Diego Carlos and Jules Koundé. So it was going to be very tough for the manager regardless, and it has already been proven that the reinforcements or the players brought in to replace the ones who left weren't at the same level. So overall, I think it's a pity that Lopetegui has left Sevilla in such a way. I think he deserved better. But at the same time, I'm 100% positive that Sevilla had arrived to a point where they absolutely needed the change, because they saw from the inside, and they had the, you know, the reports and especially the sensations, the feelings that things weren't going to turn around, and that's why ultimately Monchi was the one to, you know, in that incredible scene after the game ending in Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan and Lopetegui trying to go into the locker room, and suddenly Monchi going in, you know, snatching him from the shoulders, and, you know, turning him back and just going to the pitch once again and clap to the fan base, because the fans were waiting at the stands to delivering a farewell to him. Overall, it has been an absolute mess. And obviously, the situation doesn't make none of the actors involved to look good. I think the whole club has been damaged, at least in an image sense, public image. Also, the president, Pepe Castro, obviously, Monchi, and ultimately the manager who has gotten the sack after a very strong 3-year run as Julen Lopetegui's been at Sevilla.
Indeed. Historic time in many ways with that Europa League, as we say, and three consecutive top four finishes, which will be very hard to match, I'm sure. Speaking of trying to match it then, Jorge Sampaoli is back. He was there in 2016-17. He will return and he will face a baptism of fire in his first match with Athletic Club coming to town on Saturday. Ernesto Valverde's free-scoring Athletic. I know you're a big fan of his. How big a test is this for Sampaoli in his very first match back?
Possibly one of the biggest, because Athletic Club are one of the most informed squads of the whole competition. If you look player by player, possibly Sampaoli has done already his homework and realized that this team doesn't really depend on having the best lineup or the best squad of the league, but possibly the best one at this point in form. If you look at the players scoring, Nico Williams, his brother obviously, Iñaki Williams, you have Berenguer, you have so Muniain, obviously, you have so many players capable of unbalancing a very tight game, that especially if you look at the efficiency they have shown in the last few games in front, and also the strength that they have shown at the back with Unai Simón, obviously reinforced by that qualifying into next year Final Four in the Nations League. Overall, these players have the confidence, and that's why Ernesto Valverde is taking advantage of it. And that's why possibly if Sevilla had to pick, I don't know, 10 potential teams to face after such an ordeal and such a fallout as the one suffered this week, obviously Athletic Club wouldn't be one of those 10, because they are very confident at this point. So yeah, definitely one of the biggest challenges that Sampaoli would face as a new manager for any team, and obviously for Sevilla.
Yes, if Athletic win at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan, they could go joint top level 19 with Barca and Real Madrid before those two play at the weekend. Well, the match day kicks off at El Sadar on Friday night, and it's your team, Paco, Valencia, who travel there. Osasuna, fresh from that point at the Santiago Bernabeu. Valencia, fresh from the point at the very last minute against Espanyol. How do you see this one going? It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Osasuna, they surprisingly lost their last home game to Getafe. And of course, Valencia still yet to win away from home this season.
Yeah, and Osasuna's defeat was one of those consequences of not really being a top six, top seven squad, because their form was great, their dynamic playstyle was great. I think that Osasuna have been overachieving for most of this initial run of games in La Liga, but that's the main difference with other squads. When you have a dip in form, you are able to, you know, get some players off the bench and keep the level to a consistent one, and that's why eventually teams such as Betis or Villarreal, or obviously the big three, Atletico, Real Madrid and Barca, will win a string of games and will keep a run of games unbeaten, because they are able to, you know, keep things fresh. Whereas for Osasuna, they are very reliant on the starting lineup. Whenever they have one or two absences, they severely notice it, obviously, and it's a problem for them. Whereas for Valencia, they have been struggling away from home, At Mestalla, when playing at home, they have been very consistent with 3 wins, only 1 defeat against Atletico in a game where they deserved much more. But away from home, obviously, I have seen and analyzed and scrutinized all of their games. They have been lacking in many areas, and they are facing this game with the absence of possibly Samu Castillejo, who has been suffering some back problems for the last few days, and he, you know, he was limping for a bit in that game against Espanyol last weekend, so that's why he will possibly miss this one. I believe Yunus Musa is going to be back, so more options for Gennaro Gattuso in the midfield. And possibly the players to be sacrificed over there would be Ilaix Moriba, who didn't do really well in the last couple of games, and possibly Yunus will be, again, once a starter. The obvious comments about Valencia, their strength relying on that more aggressive, more offensive playstyle on the midfield, on the attacking front. Let's see if Edinson Cavani can score his first goal. And at the back, you know, all of the chips in the deck for another super performance by Georgi Mamardashvili, who is on his way to becoming one of the top three, top four goalkeepers of the league. So, yeah, very different playstyles. Two very interesting coaches, Jagoba Arrasate and Gennaro Gattuso. And overall, I believe one of the best ways to kickstart this match day 18 in La Liga.
Yeah, it's going to be a thrilling night on Friday, I'm sure. Make sure you tune into that one. On to Saturday then, and we've got two of the newly promoted sides against two sides from Madrid. We've got Almeria against Rayo, and then we've got Atleti against Girona. Some interesting things to say here. I mean, Almeria still no goals or points since Umar Sadiq left. Rayo, fairly comfortable in mid-table, I'd say. Atleti as well, looking to put the pressure on Betis, but of course they're under huge pressure in the Champions League after their defeat in Belgium. And Girona, as Tom said on last week's pod, they're so fun. 8-goal thriller last weekend. You just never quite know what Girona's going to turn up. And of course, they've got a good record against Atleti. They've played 6 times. They've only lost once. And they knocked them out of the Coppa at the Metropolitano by drawing 3-3 back in 2019. So that both of these games could be pretty fun, no?
Yeah, I think we can expect goals because, for example, in Almeria, Rayo, as you said, I think that Umar Sadiq's departure for Real Sociedad had two big losers. On one hand, obviously, Almeria, and on the other hand, obviously, Real Sociedad, because he got injured in the second game and he won't be able to play for his current team for quite a while. So, yeah, Almeria lost their main reference, the main number 9, and suddenly they forgot how to pick up points, and that has been a problem for a team who actually expects to remain in the competition and not drop to second division. Almeria will have to improve quite a lot if they, especially at the back, if they expect to achieve it. Whereas for Rayo, as you said, it's a very unpredictable team capable of delivering the best performances and obviously also the worst. When playing at home, quite consistent. Vallecas always has that kind of mystical nature to it where strange things happen eventually. The pressure of the fans, I don't know, very small ground. Whereas for Almeria's Estadio Juegos Mediterráneo, I've been a couple of times over there at, you know, the sidelines back in the day, and it's a large ground, you know, and very different to play the kind of atmosphere where whenever playing with that kind of scenery with the racing track surrounding the athletic track, it's not the same. Okay, so I think it's going to be a fun one because ultimately it's very early for Rayo Vallecano to be really thinking about something more in their competition. If you check out the standings, they are with, as you said, 10 points, mid-table. As we say here, ni frío ni calor. You are facing like the middle ground, you know, without no real pressure. Whereas for, obviously, Almeria, after 4 defeats in a row, they definitely start picking up points, not for them, but possibly because of the manager. Because at this point, we have seen already what happens with teams who are stringing defeats, like Elche, for example. We will talk about them later. But yep. I don't know. Almeria's manager could face himself this sort of situation if things don't suddenly change and turn around and they start winning games. Whereas for Atletico Girona, I think it's going to be an interesting one because of the of the aftermath of such a big defeat in the Champions League, because Atletico didn't expect that kind of, I wouldn't call it thrashing, but falling to a 2-0 scoreline, even though they didn't play that bad. It's always, you know, a kick in the whatever you want to add over there. You know, it's always a kick in the mouth, because they really expected to be able to pick some points on the road, even win the game. And they suddenly, they have cornered themselves into this kind of pressure, high pressure situation when they need to get out something positive in the three remaining games in the Champions League phase. So, in the Champions League group phase. So, obviously with their fans in front of them, things are going to be a bit different. As you said, Girona are very unpredictable. They have been capable of delivering very disappointing performances. I always remember that opening game in Mestalla, because I was able to watch it like entirely, and it was very bad. But they have been able to turn things around for a bit, and they are looking better. Some of their players are in a much better level. I don't know. I think that the pieces have been able to fall into place, and that's why they are, you know, a bit better in that sense, out of the relegation spots. But again, only 3 points above the drop, and with 2 defeats on a consecutive level, which, you know, gets some of their fans to expect them to get something positive out of this on the road game.
Yeah, the pressure always starts to build, doesn't it, when a couple of managers get sacked? You never know. You don't want to be the third, and of course Ruby could potentially be that one. Another one on that game, Oscar Trejo has just renewed his contract with Rayo Vallecano, yep. So fans of Ajax can continue to see the Argentine magician weaving his magic. The final game on Saturday is the defending champions. It's Real Madrid at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez to take on Getafe. Real Madrid will want to get back to winning ways in the league, at least, after their stumble last weekend. And of course, Getafe won this fixture last season. So do you think Getafe can do it again, or will Real Madrid be putting the pressure back on Barca?
You see, Getafe have me and many of their own fans very confused. After, you know, consistent thrashings at the beginning of the season against, I remember, against Atletico Madrid at home, even though they had many interesting signings in the last few days of the summer transfer market. Later, they lost against Girona away from home. They were unable to pick a point, and suddenly along came the, I believe, match day the fifth game, and they beat Real Sociedad. Later, they beat on the road Osasuna, which was something who nobody had achieved. And suddenly at home, they lost last week against Valladolid with an amazing game, by the way. That 2-3 scoreline, which was one of the most fun games of the weekend. And that's why I think they are very, you know, unreliable. If there's any one of the betting fans hearing us, I think that it's one of the most dangerous sites to take a peek in any match day, because you never know what they are going to bring to the table. And obviously playing at home against Real Madrid, remember that last season under Quique, they were able to beat Real Madrid. I remember 1-0 with a single Enes Unal goal, I think. And they were able to hold their ground against the team which would eventually become the champion. So yeah, Getafe have their chances, because they always take advantage of that home ground advantage. Whereas for Real Madrid, they are already on that level of, I would say, cruise control status. And they will be, at least till they face, you know, the heavyweights, the Barca once again in a few days. I believe it's match day 9, the moment where the two titans will clash. And obviously next week, and obviously the remaining games in the Champions League, even though they have 9 out of 9, so they shouldn't have any kind of problem moving on to the next round. But in La Liga, they have been able to just press on the cruise control button and be able to pull off wins even when they didn't deserve them. So it's true that if you look at the stumbles and the games being played last week, against Osasuna, they actually didn't deserve the win, and for once, you know, they suffered the fate than many other times. You know, football was able to get them out of a top spot, but not in this one. Even though Osasuna were, you know, one man down, they were able to hold their ground, and that's why the draw was very well deserved. But I don't think Real Madrid are going to change many things of their play style, or even of their plan, of their roadmap towards the, you know, the World Cup break. I think they are going to keep rotating some of the players, trying to get, you know, Benzema to be informed once again as soon as possible, because obviously they have been missing. Even though they have been scoring quite a lot, it's not the same having Benzema in front. Obviously they have Courtois to keep them afloat whenever they have any kind of mishap at the back. And I'm very impressed with the season so far of Tchouaméni in the midfield. You know, after only a couple of games, you could see some of the potential greatness he was having with the absence of Casemiro, and, you know, very big shoes to fill. But if you see him both in the Champions League games and in the Liga games, he has grown into the role beautifully, quickly, and very impressively. So even though the cost of the player was very high back in the day, there was some criticism towards that. I think Tchouaméni has proven to anyone, to the doubters and to the ones who had lots of faith in him, that he's a worthy player and he might be the starter defensive midfielder for Real Madrid for the next possibly 10 years.
Yeah, it's quite a frightening thought for their competitors, for sure. Thanks, Paco. That's all we've got time for part one, but stick with us, because in the second half of the show, we'll be looking ahead to Sunday's fixtures and the match on Monday night featuring Elche, who have just also sacked their manager, Francisco.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. I'm here with Paco Pollitt to preview match day 8 in La Liga Santander. Let's turn our attention now to Sunday's matches, and we start at Real Valladolid, who take on Real Betis in the early game. Betis, of course, face their trip to Rome on Thursday evening. We're recording this before that, so we're not quite sure how they get on there, but that's obviously a partidazo in the Europa League. Quite a tough-looking fixture on paper for Bruzela. But then, of course, as you said, they had that 3-2 win over Getafe, so the goals have finally started to arrive. Could this be a bit of a trap game for Betis, do you think?
Possibly so, because they were able to beat Getafe, as we said earlier, even though they found themselves in a tight spot after that defeat against Cadiz. You might remember a few weeks ago, with that Negredo late goal in the 93rd minute, I believe. They lost against Osasuna too. It's been a while, you know. They have been able to pick up a win per month, you could say, against Almeria at the beginning of, of September against Getafe at the beginning of October. Let's see if it doesn't take that much to get the second one this month. But again, Betis, they have that kind of squad with depth and the quality needed, where Pellegrini will be able to rotate quite a lot in the Europa League, and the team won't really notice it in the week. And I think that the Betis are the clear favorites because of the runoff of games they have lately. Even though last week, you know, they stumbled against Celta, because you can't be 100% of your potential always. Only the top three squads in the competition are able to do that. But yeah, you have the occasional stumble, but you know, the confidence of Betis this season is skyrocketing. So I expect Borja Iglesias and his teammates to be able to get the job done.
Interesting, yeah. Well, you mentioned Cadiz there, and they take on Espanyol at the Nuevo Mirandilla. They've coming off the back of, as you say, that 1-0 win and then a clean sheet against Villarreal. So potentially a corner turn there for Sergio. Of course, he used to play for Espanyol back when he was a player. And Espanyol, they're really struggling to get over the line in games. They were level at the they were level against Real Madrid and then lost. They were level against La Real for a while and lost. They were ahead against Valencia last weekend and then drew with that last minute howler from Alvaro Fernandez. And of course, they tried to come back against Sevilla but couldn't do it. What's not clicking there? And do you think Alvaro Fernandez will be able to keep his spot after that glaring error last week?
Yeah, you said a howler. It's the I liked a lot the term, the blooper. No? It was like the one of the. Yeah, I don't know. He was what he was thinking. Obviously, he believed that the lobbed ball was going out of the sticks, and he got confident, and that's why, you know, ultimately Valencia were able to pick up a point. But you could compare Espanyol to that kind of WWE fighter or wrestler who is able to deliver the best performance, and he doesn't have that kind of signature closing move, and he's able to close the games whenever he has the advantage. And, you know, suddenly there's a reversal and the opposition is able to, you know, pin him into the ground, get the tap out, you know, 1-2-3, and the fight is done. And that what is happening to poor Espanyol. They are doing many things right. I think they actually deserve the win against Valencia last week, but always, there's always a slip-up. And ultimately, that is costing them many things, because I think Diego Martinez is finding himself in a place where he wasn't really when he was back in Granada, because Granada had actually very strong scorers and strikers. Remember Roberto Soldado,
Molina.
Jorge Molina, obviously. He had that kind of veteran attitude, you know, craftsmanship. He had that kind of player who was able to read how the game was developing, and if you know how to stop it suddenly, and you know, go to the floor, complain about you know, an injury, whatever, lose some time. I don't know. They were able to mold the game into their interests, whereas for Espanyol, they are very, very
naive, I guess.
Rookie-like in some of their actions. And for example, Álvaro Fernández's mistake last week, was one of the examples. Losing that hard 4 points against Real Madrid was another example, against Real Sociedad once again. So they get things done 99%, but you know, this is La Liga. You need to do it through and through 100% of the time. And that's the main issue with Espanyol. Whereas for the opposition, I think that Cádiz, even though they have been able to get something positive out of the last two games, they are still in danger. They are still in the drop zone, and they will need much, much more consistency in their play style if they are expecting to things finally make a change. Obviously, Sergio might not be in the same level of pressure as 2 weeks ago, but they are far from being relaxed and in a comfortable spot. So two teams in danger, two teams struggling, and that's when the drama appears, obviously. Matt, that's when the you know, any mistake in the last 15 minutes comes into play, when any, you know, any player gets suddenly too excited, and we can have a couple of reds here and there. So yeah, this one will have possibly the high point of the drama in this 10 game run this weekend.
Let's get ready to rumble, hein?
Definitely.
Well, from potential wrestling to potential artwork, we've got Real Sociedad taking on Villarreal, two very attractive teams to watch. Is this your game of the weekend?
Possibly so. If you like the you know, offensive play style, attractive play style in the last few weeks, I think that Real Sociedad have been learning and coping, you know, how to live without their starting number nine, which was going to be this season Umar Sadiq, and suddenly that injury, you know, has disjointed a bit the game plan which their manager was going to have in place. But at the same time, we have Villarreal, who are you know, looking into their European appointments every single midweek in the same way as also Real Sociedad are doing so. And that's why I think it might be a bit diluted in a sense, because both of them are going to try to be heavy contenders for their own European competitions. In Real Sociedad case, obviously the Europa League, and in Villarreal's case, the Conference League. And that is going to make them rotate quite a bit. And that's why the lineups possibly won't be as strong as expected. And that's the only reason, because the rest of the arguments are all in favor of this one being possibly the game of the weekend. With Real Sociedad, if you check out the standings of both squads, they are more or less aiming into the same spots. You have Real Sociedad 13 points, Villarreal only one behind with 12, you know, creeping into those European positions, trying to snatch Osasuna out of theirs. Also Athletic Club being over there, one of the targets for Real Sociedad, who have been consistently in the last few years being the best Basque side, and they want to keep that kind of, you know, title close to their best or under their belt. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think that if injuries are able to respect both squads in the midweek games, we might have one of the most interesting, if not the best, game of the weekend.
Yeah, I think for me, it'd be interesting to see how Take Kubo does, because it's one of his former clubs, and already it looks like Imanola is getting far more out of him than Unai Emery did. And Villarreal winless in three in the league, so the pressure is going to be on him if they don't win this one, to see that familiar tale of him not being able to get it done in the league compared to the European competitions. Anyway, we'll see that one. It's certainly one to watch on Sunday evening. The Sunday night game is at Camp Nou. It's Barca against Celta. No room for error, really, for Xavi's side. They've got Inter Milan at home in the Champions League before El Clasico next weekend. Celta, quite Jekyll and Hyde, because, I mean, they've had three wins, keeping a clean sheet in all of those, but then their three defeats, they've conceded 11. So it really is a case of, you know, which side is going to turn up. Iago Aspas likes a goal against Barca. Is he going to score again here?
Well, if you have to pick a candidate, you have to go with Iago Aspas. If you see the run of performances this season, at least till Lewandowski came around and snatched that first spot, Aspas was the top scorer for the competition in the first 3-4 games. So, yeah, this is going to be interesting, especially as Celta have struggled quite a lot on the road. At home, they have been pretty consistent with wins over Cadiz, over Betis, especially last week. But on the road, I think the only positive one was the game against Girona back in August, at the end of August, with that 1-0 win on the road. Again, Aspas goal, you know, traditional stuff. But they always provide top teams, Real Madrid, Barca, Atletico, with some sense of trouble. And I'm very interested on the way Barca are going to react after their defeat against Inter. Not because of the whole, you know, referee ordeal and all of the controversy with the VAR and the handball inside the box. I think that they will be thinking in the following weeks more about the Champions League and less about the league. Whereas for 2.5 years, I believe, they weren't top of La Liga. And that has been quite a while. So yeah. I also expect most of Barca fans to demand some that kind of pressure to keep the position and keep top of the league, because it has been so difficult to be back there. It required a rush of five consecutive wins for Barca to finally be able to wait for a Real Madrid stumble last weekend and become top of the league. Obviously, Lewandowski will be in his prime once again, even though he didn't score against Inter. Let's see how the rest of the team responds, and especially let's see once again at the back with Gerard Piqué and I believe Eric García will be the ones starting. You know, at the end of the day, even though Piqué wasn't going to really play that much this season with all of the signings, injuries have made fate to have some kind of irony towards Xavi and towards some of Barca's board. So we will see once again, I believe, Gerard Piqué at the back against one of the most unpredictable frontmans and number nines in the league as Yago Aspas. They should provide some trouble, but yeah, Barca should get the job done, because if not, we could definitely speak openly about a crisis in Camp Barca, which is whenever they are unable to win two games in a row. That's indeed the level of demanding and pressure whenever you are talking about Barca and Real Madrid.
Indeed, constant scrutiny all the time, unrelenting pressure. On to Monday night then, and speaking of crisis, it's Elche who have sacked Francisco. Lots of rumours about the new coach. They haven't appointed one as yet. They're taking on Mallorca on Monday, who have been pretty impressive recently. First of all, what's your take on the search for a new coach? There's many names mentioned, the likes of Pepe Bordalas, a couple of Argentinians in the mix too. Who do you think they'll appoint, and will he be arrived in time for this game?
Yeah, you said Rocco, one of the candidates. Pepe Bordalas, who was back in the day an Elche manager, and he had one of the most successful runs for the club, is also in the mix. Also Paco López, Levante's former manager, was one of the rumored names in the last few days. I don't really know which road they are going to follow and which path they are going to follow with the appointment of the new manager, but you know, knowing how Elche operates, I think that the Argentinians will eventually have the upper hand, or at least more chances, because Bragarnik, who is the owner, more or less the owner of the club, always favors that kind of, you might remember Almirón a couple of seasons ago, and Jorge Almirón, I don't know, it's that kind of team where and club where the ownership really steers the boat in the road that they really want to travel. And that's why, you know, 35 Spanish managers, like, as you said, you know, Bordalas or Paco López or whoever, they have less chances than the Argentinian ones. But, you know, we will eventually see. I think that obviously they needed a change, because their run of games was disastrous in the last few weeks. And you can see the standings, only 1 point out of the first 21, that is absolutely awful for them. You can't really defend this kind of performance under Francisco, which is a pity. But yeah, this season, Christmas got here early for poor Francisco with his sacking. Main advantage for them, that they are going to play at home. I believe that Martinez Valero will be a rowdy place, because they definitely need on Monday night to get out something positive. If not, they might be with foot and a half, as we say, pie y medio, in second division before Christmas, and that would be a situation which would really drag things on with the fan base. And you know, Elche are not in the best spot, because you might remember last season was also a very disappointing one, always saving the neck in the nick of time in the last few games, which is, you know, at the end of the day, an agony for any Elche fan. So that's why they need to turn things around as soon as possible. And that's why Mallorca isn't really the best team to get out something positive in this game, even though they are mid-table. And I think that I have repeated myself in this point a few times already this season. I think they are performing much better than the number of points that you see in their yep. scorecard. Only 8 points and mid-table for Mallorca is amazing. They should have more, because their playstyle and their merits and their, you know, their scoring ability, their ambition has been much larger than the actual number of points that they have. So I don't know what the Aguirre side will be able to get positive or not in their game at Martinez Valero, but yeah, this is once again the second spot this weekend where drama might appear if Elche, you know, suddenly the game starts with a caretaker manager for the next few days and suddenly they allow a goal in or two goals in the first 15, 20, half an hour. That might be real drama and real pressure for Elche's ownership. So I don't know. I think that they might be expecting players to step up to the plate and perform much better than they that have been doing in the last month.
Yeah, it would be a real shame to see Elche go down in their centenary season, of course, too. Well, thank you very much, Paco, for your thoughts and insight there. Fantastic weekend ahead, as always, in La Liga. You can check out our Substack, laligalowdown.substack.com, for plenty of articles on the likes of Francisco sacking, Lopetegui, Sampaoli, all the Champions League reaction too. That's where you need to go. Follow us at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter as well, and follow Paco too if you don't already. I'm sure you do, listener, because everybody loves Paco.
You should do.
Absolutely. So yeah, thanks again, Paco. Thank you for listening. Yeah, we'll see you again soon. Enjoy the weekend.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.